Okay, well, I have a couple of minutes after the hour, so let's go ahead and get started. Hello, everybody. I'm Martin Rosendale, CEO of the Maryland Technology Council and a partner with Newport, and this is the live Capital M Zoomcast. Capital M Podcast, excuse me just a second, the Capital M Podcast was originally intended to further the regional conversation around capital markets in the region and access to capital. Define issues, identify solutions, and build consensus to drive change. We've pivoted the podcast to a live Zoomcast, and our focus these days is more on the COVID-19 pandemic, the regional response, and our recovery from the economic downturn. I'd like to thank our sponsor today, Newport, for bringing us the Zoomcast. Newport is a national strategic advisory firm that helps business owners and CEOs of mid-sized companies grow and improve the performance of their businesses. Many mid-sized companies are facing significant challenges right now related to the COVID-19 pandemic and accompanying economic fallout. Newport's business resilience team is available to help those businesses get back on track. For more information, you can go to the website at newportllc.com or contact Tony Cord directly at tony.cord@newportllc.com. The Maryland Technology Council is the industry trade association in Maryland that represents both technology and life sciences companies. We're here to support our businesses. Fundamentally, what our role is to help our businesses succeed. But before we get started today, just let me go through a couple of housekeeping items. First of all, I mentioned your microphones will be on mute as you file in, and we'll keep them that way for the duration of the Zoomcast today. We will be using the Q&A function. So if you have a question, please feel free to type it into the Q&A section. You should find a Q&A icon at the bottom of your screen. If you do that, we will be able to see the question and respond to it. We also have Tammy Thomas from TEDCO in the background, who is there to answer some of the questions as they come in. So don't hesitate. Feel free to put your question as you think of it and as we're going through the conversation. My guest today is Dr. Linda Singh. Linda is the interim executive director and CEO of TEDCO. She's an author, an advisor, and I would say a leader's leader. Linda, welcome and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Marty. I am so glad to be here.
So, Linda, first of all, it looks like I might be having a little bit of a stability problem with my internet. Are you sensing any issues with my sound or video?
Just a slight delay. I am.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we should be able to work with that. So Linda, maybe if you would take a minute and tell us about yourself, what you do and why you do it.
Absolutely. Well, first starting out, I'm a 38-year plus veteran from the Maryland National Guard. I also served over 20 plus years in private industry, mainly working in the consulting side, systems integration for organizations like the federal government, which would be Department of Justice, State Department, Department of Defense, and a number of other clients, Social Security Administration, Department of Homeland Security. And so when you think of just the breadth of things that I've done over my career, I've gotten the amazing opportunity to not only work in fields and in areas that I've enjoyed and I've been able to learn from so many other leaders and really not just leaders, but also from people that have worked for me. And what I think has been really amazing about it and what I kind of learned about myself is that, you know, my drive comes from being able to work with people and organizations and to see them really grow and shine. And especially at the time of adversity, when you think that everything is not only going against you, when you can really come through that, and when I can see organizations come through that challenge and change, that's what gives me my drive. That's what makes me want to continue to do what I do. And when I was asked to join TEDCO and to support them in their transition, this was another way for me to not only give back in terms of that level of service to my state, but also to a broader community, so that folks would see that my background was not just solely military. It's really applicable to what everybody is experiencing, and being able to kind of bring a team together, collaborate around so many different capabilities that we have within the TEDCO brand, and then to be able to kind of highlight that, it gave me really an opportunity to just help in a very, very different way. And I was inspired, and I'm continuing to be inspired by what my folks do. And so that just helps me to drive harder.
Linda, thank you. So first I want to say, I just got a message from one of the attendees of the Zoomcast. It sounds like Zoom might be having a bandwidth issue, and our video is a little bit unstable, but it sounds like our audio is working fine. So I think we could go ahead and keep going. So thank you for that introduction. I really appreciate it. So you've written a book. I know you have another book coming out. The book that's been published is Moments of Choice. And when I was reading the book this weekend, there was a section in there on resilience and relentlessness. And as I was reading that, it occurred to me that today, with the pandemic and the economic downturn, I mean, those are traits that are really important right now. Would you mind just taking a minute and giving us your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. You know, and I think it is a perfect kind of example of where we are. And it's going to be critical for all of us to think about not just how we come out of this and really get through this. But I think, you know, when we get to the other side, and what I've seen, there will be some of us that are going to struggle, right? I mean, as we try to get through this, we will struggle. But when we get to the other side, we will be stronger. You know, all of us that kind of went into this, and I'm thinking really globally, none of us have really seen the pandemic in the way that it has hit us. And so it's the first time. And the first time for us going through anything is going to be that unknown. So if you think about when we get on the other side, we'll look back and we'll say, you know, I don't want to say that it was, you know, not so bad, but oh, by the way, I was able to weather the storm. And that's really what, you know, resilience is about, is I've had to come through so many different things. And I think as I'm an older, you know, I look back on my life as being older now, I'm not real sure that I could have weathered some of those things in, you know, the way that I did back then. I mean, I still look at it and think, how did I do that? And then we get hit with, you know, something like this. And you realize that, you know, in many cases, we are a lot stronger than what we give ourselves credit for. And so being resilient means that you do have to take care of yourself in a way that allows you to kind of prepare for that storm, right? To be able to weather the storm. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean that it's not going to come without sacrifice. But what it does mean is that when you get to the other side, you can look at this and say, okay, now that I've done that, what did I learn from that? And what can I take forward? How can I, you know, inspire others to be, you know, able to be stronger through that? So I think we really have to think about how are we preparing ourselves to be resilient. And that doesn't start with, you know, I'm gonna say I'm resilient today and it just happens. It starts with building on our experiences, building on those challenges, learning from that, and then, you know, making changes as we go along.
That's great. Thank you. So, to Linda, the entire country's been dealing with the pandemic. The entire world's been dealing with the pandemic. I know at the Tech Council, we've switched to working from home. We did that in the middle of March. Now we're starting to think about returning. And as we think about this, as we have these discussions, and a number of task forces have formed to help businesses make these decisions. At the Tech Council, we've discovered that we work well remotely, so we're not in a hurry to rush back. But we are preparing. We're making sure that our workstations are properly distanced and we're getting all those things in place. I'm curious about TEDCO. How did you respond and how are you thinking about the return?
That's a good question. So the first thing, when we started getting into the midst of realizing that we were going to have to work remotely, the first thing that I asked the team to do is to put together a contingency plan. And the contingency plan addressed for each one of our programs, if we were to go to having to work remotely, what did it mean? How were we going to maintain operations? And if we needed something, whether it was additional resource or we needed certain things to be in place, what was it so that we would be able to continue to operate? So that was important to me. And it was, and what I would say about the team is not only did they take that, we created a contingency plan that we will be able to continue to improve on. So it really has not impacted our ability to support, all of the clients or customers, as you may want to call them, that we do. The only challenge is some of the individuals that we deal with, like the schools, they have slowed up a little bit. So that, you know, while we were ready, they're not necessarily where we would have been had the pandemic not hit. The key thing about that is, though, we're going to be there and we're going to be waiting for them when they're ready to finish executing. Now, as we start thinking about preparing to come back, you know, the team is looking at our return plan. And, you know, the main thing that we're keeping in mind is that we have to be able to do it in order to not just keep the employees of TEDCO safe, but when we start engaging with the external customer, we have to be able to keep them safe. And so the team, we are not rushing back into the office, but we will start looking at how will we return, how many of our employees will be in, which days will they be in, because we do have some individuals that are higher risk. And so those individuals will continue to work remotely as much as possible, but we are not hurrying because we realize that we've been even more productive in this mode than we were previously. And I think that's allowed us to focus in on not just the institutions that we work with, but the companies that we work with a little bit closer. And so I would say that the team is, you know, we are missing one another. So I do believe, it's funny, you know, we're a small team, but I believe that, you know, we're actually missing that level of engagement with one another. So weekly, we do our staff meetings. We try to ensure that everybody has their cameras on, if at all possible, just so that they have that contact and we can continue to collaborate. And then we've gone to doing, bi-weekly happy hours. And you don't really have to drink to be, I don't drink when I'm doing them. I'm usually drinking, water or some kind of energy drink. But we actually do happy hours and, we try to make them so that they're either themed or we're playing some games. So just something completely different to kind of take our minds off of actually being in the middle of a pandemic. And then biweekly, we had already instituted doing lunch and learns. And so our lunch and learns are really focused in personal development and how we can continue to develop and grow as individuals and then as well as part of a team. So those are some of the things that we are doing to try to stay connected, to try to stay engaged with each other, and then to continue to ensure that we're being productive.
That's great. I'm hearing a lot of people are doing the video happy hours and video lunches to keep their staff connected. I think that's fantastic. So most people know TEDCO as a public-private investment organization, but it's a lot more than that. So could tell us about TEDCO, your view of TEDCO and your vision for TEDCO, please.
Right. And so, you know, what I love about TEDCO and just looking at the various pieces of it, because, you know, I tried to explain to folks that while we are kind of that investment piece, but the other half of us are more along the advisory and that supporting kind of aspect. And so if you were to divide us into maybe three parts, I would say we have kind of those grants areas where we, work with organizations that either are going after grants or have gotten grants where they are, taking technology to a new level, right? So they could be getting grants from the federal government, or they could have gotten one of our grants. The middle piece is kind of that tech transfer out of the institutions and what we work with from the colleges and universities. So that's kind of another piece that, you know, our organization has. And then that last piece is really focused in on the investment. So I like to think of TEDCO as being kind of three different entities rolled into one that is, if I was to say kind of the one-stop shop, they would be the one-stop shop for an entrepreneur to come to and really learn what's available and whether or not any of the programs would actually meet their needs and if they qualify for any one of our programs. And so I do believe it's a place where, you know, you can come and learn a lot about, what you need to do as an entrepreneur to raise funds and then also to be able to pitch your business, because part of it is you may have a good idea, but you may not be able to pitch it, right? You may not know how to do that. And as I've watched some of the entities actually pitch to our team, one of the greatest pieces that they do is the feedback that an individual company or team would get. The feedback that you get, you can't pay for. You can't even wrap that up into any amount of dollars, because it is something that you're going to be able to take back and then roll that into kind of your future pitches as you go forth and looking for investors.
That's great. So I want to remind everybody that you can use the Q&A function now as we're talking. And if you have any questions, for instance, if you would like contact information for some of the folks at TEDCO or further information about some of these programs, feel free to put your question in the Q&A and we'll get you an answer. So Linda, as you look to the future in TEDCO investment in Maryland, and not just the pandemic, obviously this is going to change the future somewhat. What are the market trends that you see and the rest of the leadership at TEDCO? What do you see happening in this region?
Right. And so, you know, the thing, and I think the challenging piece is that, you know, we did a look at the market before the pandemic hit, right? So no one really thought about this when the pandemic hit. So I think you're going to see some huge swings and changes. I think there's going to be a refocus on life sciences and where the role that life sciences plays, but not just life sciences, but the role that technology in life sciences plays. And how do we do those things better? So I think you're going to see a huge focus in that area and kind of a resurgence. And even though here in Maryland, we're doing really, really well in that area, I think you're going to see an increase. Another area that I think will come out of this is manufacturing. And what does it mean to be able to have, you know, is it just-in-time manufacturing, or should we be going back to the old days of producing and storing, right? Where, you know, you have your, a lot of your logistic supplies actually stored away. So I think we're going to see a resurgence in what manufacturing means and how will technology help us to be able to go leaps and bounds faster and to be able to retool faster. And so I think we're gonna see, you know, a shift and a resurgence in that, and not just, globally, but I think we'll see a lot of that here in Maryland, because we've we've seen some of that through the pandemic, but I think what the pandemic has actually shown us is that we may not be, as a country, as resilient as we need to be with some of our capabilities, because we have relied so much internationally. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but when things like this happens and when the whole system is stressed, how do you use technology and innovation to be able to leapfrog that? And so I think we're going to see a huge reliance on innovation as we go forward, because innovation is what is going to get us through this, and innovation is what's going to get us to the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing that as well. It's fascinating to me. And your comment about the country maybe not being as resilient as we might have thought it was coming into this, I think is also a very accurate assessment. There's a lot of looking at and assessing the supply chains when this all began, particularly on the life sciences side, because we were worried about pharmaceuticals, and then we were worried about testing and PPE and so on. But now I think we're starting to get a handle on that, and technology is playing a role in resolving these issues. But if anything good has come from this, what I've seen, certainly here in Maryland, is this tremendous willingness to collaborate and resolve these problems fast. I mean, we're seeing on the technology side, you know, a small group of tech council members, as well as Howard County Economic Development and a handful of others, came together and said, you know, people need something to help them access the stimulus funds. And so they said, let's create an app. Let's create a wizard. 10 days is all it took them to get that wizard in the market, working, no bugs, and thousands of people were using it. On the life sciences side, we're seeing vaccines that are in clinical trials today, when we only got the genomic sequence of this virus in the middle of January. Normally, that's a multi-year process.
That's right.
And so, you know, this collaboration and this, you know, the strong will to collaborate and make things happen in a challenging situation like this, I think is amazing. I'm curious, as you look forward, how do you see, is that going to change the region now that we know we can do this? You know, why not keep doing it, that kind of thing? Do you see this, some of this sticking, I guess, is the question that I'm trying to ask.
So I do see some of it sticking, right? I think the companies that have shifted their focus, I do see some of that sticking for some time, because what we have to remember is that while we are starting to return or pull out of this pandemic, it's going to be with us still for a little bit. And so we still have a ways to go before there will be a vaccine. And that's assuming that everybody's going to take the vaccine, right? So we still have a ways to come out of this. I still think that some of this is going to stick. I think the piece that has me concerned is one of the items that you hit on as being just amazing is the collaboration. Because, you know, what we find is when resources are constrained, right? When money is constrained, resources is constrained, collaboration is the first thing that falls by the wayside. And so I am hoping that we don't let that happen, right? That would be a travesty for us to allow collaboration to fall by the wayside and to miss the opportunity to really leap forward into this new space for ourselves. And so that's probably the thing that I worry about most is, you know, how are we going to continue to work together and collaborate in a much faster, right, almost in an agile environment. And I'm not real sure that that's human nature to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. It'll be fascinating to watch and see how that evolves. Like you, I hope we don't lose this. This has just been so amazing to watch this happen. I hope we don't lose it. Linda, a question did come in with respect to what kinds of partnerships does TEDCO have today? Partnerships with others in the state, outside the state, what kind of partnerships does TEDCO have in place today?
Right. So the unique thing about TEDCO, from a legal perspective, they don't like us to use partnerships. So I'm going to stick to, you know, we don't really form partnerships in that manner because we're prohibited, but we do work with, you know, all the universities. So there's a number of universities that we work with more closely than others that have programs. We work with the Department of Commerce. We work with the Maryland Tech Council. And so, you know, we really do try to work with so many different organizations to be able to fuel not only entrepreneurship, but also economic development. And so we try to stay away from the word partnership, but we work very collaboratively with all of these different organizations, depending on, you know, where they are. And if you look at our different programs, I mean, you know, the Maryland Stem Cell Program, you know, the Maryland Innovation Initiative and what that does, and our Rural Business Program, which actually has a number of things that goes out into the different counties, and then our Builder Fund, which is focused in on disadvantage, and then if you look at our seed funds. And so we have a very eclectic kind of portfolio, and it takes us actually collaborating with different parts of the organizations across the state in order to continue to increase our ability to add even new programs as we see them coming along and they get added to our portfolio.
So I hadn't thought about it, but I guess partnership is a legal phrase.
It is.
I should have been more careful.
I try to get myself away from using it, but it's, you know, I mean, and so I say collaboration, right? And you know, those types of things.
Right. No, very good. Which is what I actually meant. I didn't think of partnership in terms of its legal meaning. So Linda, you dedicated yourself to helping others, and in this role at TEDCO, you know, it's more of the same. You're there. You're helping others. Could you tell us a little bit about your own leadership advisory work that you do?
Absolutely. Well, first, I think it helps you to understand, you know, why is it so important for me to help others? And so I didn't realize that was a piece of me that was so important until you don't have the ability to do it in the same way. And when I was deployed to Afghanistan, you know, you're doing great things. And I don't want to say that I enjoyed the deployment, but because I don't know how many people really enjoy deployments. But what I learned is that, you know, prior to me leaving, I was very engaged in a lot of different programs in the community and within my company. And when I came back, it took me a while to re-engage, right? I, was at a very different place in my life. I wasn't, completely integrated back in. And so it took me a while. And what I realized through that is things were off. Like all of that time that it took me to reintegrate back in, it was about 6 or 7 months or so. I was missing a core piece. Like I wasn't out and engaging and helping individuals and helping organizations. And so I felt like a piece of me was just like gone. And I actually blamed it on, you know, the deployment, but in reality, the answer was right in front of me. I had to re-engage, and I really had to get back involved. And so that, having kind of that aha moment, allowed me to be able to lean more into what's important for me. And how do I do that no matter where I'm at? How do I do that in every organization? And the first piece of it is caring about people. And that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not you know, delivering, you know, the hard messages that need to be delivered, but it's caring about people. Because if you care about people, then you can really get to the heart of, you know, what they care about, and how do you use that to be able to enhance and increase the leadership across an organization. And so if you think back to me running the National Guard, you know, I cared about people in a way, even though I wasn't engaging with every single person, like all 7,000, but I at least, you know, was able to get to the point that I could connect with someone at the lowest level. And I wanted them to see that what we were doing, this journey that we were on it together. We might be in different places, but we were on it together. And helping them to see that vision, helping them to share into that vision, and then for them to know what role and what piece they play in delivering that is extremely important. And so as I continue to go about my work, I'm trying to find, how do I do more of that, right? How do I help organizations to be able to get that level of really caring and compassion, you know, for their employees? And then how do they use that to fuel their productivity? Because, you know, it's been shown that if you bring in what I would call the emotional intelligence side of you, and you pour that into everything you do, you will see increased productivity in your organization and within your teams. And so I am committed to trying to work, no matter where I'm at, the rest of my life in helping to do that, because I enjoy it. And it gives me great satisfaction. And it's not about, you know, it really isn't about me, because I've grown and I'm going to continue to grow, but it's about what I can pour into somebody else that gives me that satisfaction. Mm-hmm.
That's great. We talked about your book, or I talked about your book briefly at the beginning here. I just want to remind everybody that the title of the book is Moments of Choice, My Path to Leadership. And everybody listening, I want to tell you that if you want to understand better how deep her motivation and passion is on this topic, read the book. It's very inspirational. It's very good. It's very, very well written. And you'll truly understand how deep the passion and motivation here is. So Linda, thank you for that. Your work is amazing. Your leadership at TEDCO is phenomenal. I hear only good things about you all the time from all the staff at TEDCO. But I would be remiss if I didn't take a minute and ask you to get your crystal ball out and tell us what you think the future for investment looks like in Maryland. There's been a lot of talk in the past about needing more venture capitalists in the state in order to provide better access to capital. But what do you think the future for investment in Maryland looks like?
Well, so I think, you know, whether or not you have more venture capital in the state is not necessarily a requirement. I think what the requirement is that we need to have more entrepreneurs that are willing to step out and into that technology space that's going to take that risk. You know, we can get venture capital funds from anywhere. So I would say don't limit yourself just to the state. If you are working with a venture capital organization that's outside the state and you can get funds, you need to do so, right? Because it is going to get very competitive. I think it's going to be a little bit more competitive. And it would be great if we could have, you know, more individuals that are willing to start venture capital organizations or join venture capital organizations that will fuel economic development here in Maryland. I think that we need that. My concern is that it is going to get very competitive, and that we potentially could see, I don't want to say less funds being invested, but I just think the types of things that they decide to invest in may be a little bit more limited initially until we can see some of the loosening of things happen. And so while I don't really have a crystal ball, I'm hoping that history here will allow us to see that, you know, we've come through, maybe not any of us, right? Not in our time, but we've come through something like this before. And, you know, we are in the midst of kind of this industrial revolution. Technology is a huge key. It's a huge piece to that. And we can only do that through innovation and ideas. And so then we have to continue to push to ensure that here in Maryland, we're getting our piece of those funds that are out there.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because it's been my contention all along that the capital markets are an international market, and companies really need to go where the investors are, and they need to think of it as a market. Yeah. So they need to find the investors that are interested in what they're doing. My personal experience, having raised about $110, $120 million for Maryland companies, I can tell you $500,000 of that came from Maryland. The rest came from interested investors in other parts of the world that were interested in me and what I was doing. Yeah. And I think that's really the answer, is to understand it's a market and to get out there and sell like it's a market.
Absolutely. And I mean, and even to that point, in the last week, I've had at least 6 or 7 investors from all over the world. And the farthest one was probably India, that reached out and said, hey, you know, it's great to see what Tedco is doing, which is really interesting, but that should tell you something, right? They're paying attention. And so they're out there. And so I think that we need to make sure that, you know, the last time I checked, money does not discriminate against boundaries, against people. You know, it is global. So therefore, we need to think globally when it comes to looking for money.
Excellent. So before we get to the Q&A, Linda, is there anything that we've not covered today that you would like to talk about?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing I want to say is that, you know, the team at Tedco has come through a storm, right? And then we get hit with the pandemic. So they've now had 2 storms, and they've weathered the storms. And when I say they've weathered the storms, I have not seen them, other than what they were required to do in terms of slowing up in investments, but this team has been working. And so if that gives you any indication of the resiliency that is within the Tedco structure, that should tell you something, because they've been hit back to back to back, but yet they have not stopped, and their level of commitment has not stopped. And so I want to thank, you know, the team for really being committed to what they believe in. And that's one of the things that, you know, I will walk away at some point from this team and just know that there are good people trying to do good things.
That's fantastic. And I'll tell you, from the outside looking in, it's clear what you're saying. The team has been amazing. They've stood up to tremendous challenge and tremendous change. And I think it's also a testament to your leadership, Linda, as well. So you've got a great team, and you're a phenomenal leader. So it's worked out well. We do have some questions. I am going to put a slide up in just a second, because it has some contact information, and I know some people have been asking about contact information. So I'm going to share that slide now. And you should be able to see the website and other contact information here for Tedco and for Linda. So Linda, the questions that have come in, we have one question about leveraging the board of directors. You've got a pretty impressive board of directors.
I do.
Are you able to leverage their experience, their networks to assist companies in Maryland?
Oh, absolutely. And what I think, it's funny, because I was on earlier today, I was talking with one of the board of directors. And, you know, when you look at our board of directors and what they're able to bring in terms of advice and experience and how they're looking at the future of Tedco, we have a team that is just amazing. Like, I have been able to, you know, spend time having conversations with each of them. And I continue to be amazed at their level of not only expertise and capability, but then, you know, what they're willing to do to support Tedco and the whole ecosystem. And so we are able to leverage them. And, you know, we're doing, you know, they actually have reviewed the overall Tedco plan, and they're helping to set that direction with us. And so they're very, very engaged. And I would have to say, you know, thank you to them for being so committed.
Great. Yeah, I've met only a few of your directors, and they are an impressive group, I have to say.
Yes, they are.
So another question has come in. Does TEDCO plan specific solicitations or mechanisms that might be optimized for COVID? Are there specific funding mechanisms, tools, projects that TEDCO is planning?
Well, so we don't have any that has come out, you know, because that all comes down from legislation in the state. So while we don't have any that is COVID specific, what we have seen is organizations that are that have come through our program, right, or have actually been awarded funds through one of our programs, has actually done what I would call a lift and shift of their capability. Or, you know, they were coming in with an offering that was directly related and applicable to where we are in the middle of, you know, kind of the pandemic. And, you know, the first one that comes to mind, and this was one of those ones that I don't want to say it took all of TEDCO to bring it to fruition, but this particular company was touched by almost all of TEDCO in one way, shape, or form, because they started out with us, you know, kind of on one program, and then, you know, they started, they came through our mentoring program, then they actually applied through the Builder Fund, and in order to be able to award them funds and to make it applicable for COVID or make it useful at this moment, we actually had to bring together another funding mechanism from SEED, and that is clear masks, right? So it was right at the time that there were no masks anywhere. And these, you know, individuals were coming through our program, but it just so happened that, you know, we had some history with them, right? We knew them, they weren't far enough along previously. And then boom, here they were right at the right time. And so that's just one company. We've seen, you know, probably about five or six more that, you know, they were able to come through our programs and they were doing things that was directly related to responding for the pandemic. And so, you know, we actually were, you know, very inspired, not just by the companies, but how they were able to deliver so quickly. And when I say, you know, turning around, it wasn't just them getting funding. It was them getting funding and trying to get on a production line.
That's great. So another question, how are you as the interim CEO championing rebuilding the culture at TEDCO?
Right. So, you know, this is really challenging, right? Because when you come in as an interim, a lot of times, so you can be kind of one of three interim CEOs. You can be one, a lame duck. Two, you can be the hatchet person, right? You come in and you get rid of everybody and you reshuffle the team. Or three, you can be coming in to really streamline, increase the collaboration and deal with what I would call kind of the residual kind of challenges and issues, and then moving that towards a structure that they're going to be able to sustain. And so what I've been able to do is to really focus in on, you know, what are all the good pieces that TEDCO has, and, you know, what do we say that they're supposed to be doing? How do we bring that forth and not just cement it, but make it part of our core strategy so that people understand this is what we do. And whether you add another program, well, here's how it would get added. Here's how we would bring, you know, those programs on. And so I focused in with the team on not just building, continuing to build and make a more cohesive team internally and externally, and how we're engaging with folks out in the community, but also getting them to focus in on, okay, we know where we're going. We don't have necessarily a documented roadmap. Can we put together our strategic plan? That strategic plan has to be focused on stabilizing and setting the path for the next year so that when we get a new executive director, executive director or CEO, that person now can come in and take that particular plan right in the middle of that year, right? Because they'll be in the middle of a kind of a legislative year, so they're not going to be able to do as much that first year, but it gives them the runway to set a strategic plan now for the next 5 years. And so what we focus in on as a team is how do we just really shore up our foundation and prepare for that transition. And that's taken, you know, a lot of work, because, you know, we're putting together things that may not have been in place previously, like, you know, performance management, allowing us to have a performance management system and a professional development system. You know, you can't expect people to stay with you in an organization if you're not giving them something back. So how do we do that? You know, how do we shore up and to make sure that everyone knows what our vision is and what our core values are? And, you know, they were all, I'd have to say, everyone played a part in making sure that our vision was what we wanted for the company, and then making sure that our core values was something that we could sign up to and actually live each day. And so when I think about what I've been able to really just help to facilitate with this team, it's really setting their foundation and allowing them to start building on that foundation in preparation for the transition for the future.
That's great. Thank you. So Linda, it's not a question, but Joe Reddix has asked to become a part of your network. I've known Joe for a while. I think you'll find that he's mission oriented, just like you, and a tremendous guy. He certainly believes in giving back to the community. Absolutely. So we'll make sure that you have his contact information, and we can facilitate that connection. Are there any other questions? If there are, please type them into the Q&A section. Linda, while we're waiting to see if there are any other questions, I want to thank you so much for your time today. You've been tremendous. Certainly, you're calm under pressure. When we hit that broadcast button and the Zoom connection became unstable, I was starting to panic a little bit. But about 10 or 12 minutes into it, it looked like everything cleared up. So, and our audio at least was good throughout the entire broadcast. We do have another question here. So this question has to do with policy. What policy recommendations do you think Maryland should adopt to support stronger innovation collaboration?
Well, you know, that's a tough one, right? Because, you know, with more policies comes more restrictions. We should not have to be forced to collaborate. That should just be a thing that we do. But if we wanted to see, you know, more policies in and around that, then you would basically start saying that innovation has to include more than just one entity receiving the funding, right? So you want to make sure that it's spread a little bit wider, and that you're actually incentivizing organizations to collaborate together to be able to enhance technology. But the challenge is that if you start putting, you know, more policy and regulations around it, then you get more and more restrictions.
Great. Thank you. And that question, by the way, came from Delegate Lily Chi. I was just telling Lily yesterday that I have a tendency not to think in terms of policy. So I'm really glad that she asked that question. Yeah. That's great. Okay. Well, it looks like there aren't any other questions at this point. So again, Linda, thank you so much for your time. I want to remind everybody one more time about your book, Moments of Choice. I think it's tremendous. I think what you're doing is amazing. You've got a great team, and I think you've been able to shine a light on them and demonstrate how good of a team they actually are. Maryland needs TEDCO. Certainly the technology and life sciences industries within Maryland need TEDCO. You're doing a tremendous job. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I really enjoyed being with you guys today. And even though we say life sciences, don't forget about cyber. That's a huge piece. So thank you.
Of course. To me, you know, that's a good point, because I've had cybersecurity companies tell me that they're not tech companies.
Oh my God.
Because they provide services and other support. So anyway, you're absolutely right. Technology, cybersecurity, and life sciences, of course. So I want to say thank you to everybody who joined us today. Your time is greatly appreciated. I hope you got a lot out of the conversation. And we will be sending out a document to you that will have some information about some of the programs at TEDCO, some contact information, things that the TEDCO has provided to us that we can share with all of you. So you'll have that contact information. And I do want to remind everybody one more time, our sponsors today are Newport. And you can learn more about Newport at newportllc.com, or you can write directly to Tony Cord at tony.cord@newportllc.com. Linda, one more time, thank you so much for your time today. It was tremendous. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Marty. I appreciate it. And I enjoyed it as well.